I think it's interesting to look a little bit at the words Brahmaviharas. I don't know how you relate to them, but certainly in the early days I used to find them quite hard to relate to. Brahma particularly didn't really resonate. But I think it's really, really worth thinking about the translations of Brahma and reflecting a bit on those and just making your own connections, because I think it really helps to open up what the Brahmaviharas really are. So some of the translations are sublime, just savouring the words, just really thinking about sublime. What does that mean to you? Divine, pure, immaculate, noble, lofty, I think, was one that came up yesterday in Nayaponika Tera's reading. Excellent. So to me they come to something very, very pure, very, very beautiful, quite profoundly beautiful. And I've spent a lot of time, I think, over the years just really, really taking those words in and, just really helping me understand more and more what they mean in my own experience. Vihara's a bit easier, I think, to relate to, meaning to dwell in, abode, to live in, to stay in, those kind of things, a lodging. And that conjures something very, very beautiful, doesn't it? Just the idea that these are qualities of heart and mind, to dwell in, to stay in. As Nayaponika Tera said in the reading that we had last night, to feel at home, to become constant dwelling places where we feel at home. And for me, that is such a draw, just that sort of sense that, that could be a possibility, that I could dwell in those qualities, in those states of heart and mind as my home. So one of the things the Brahmaviharas has done for me very particularly is I used to be somebody definitely who kind of turned away from the world. And the Brahmaviharas have really turned me around and turned me towards. That's the thing I feel they've done more than anything. Through their beauty, they've really drawn me, attracted me, enabled me in a sense to sort of face myself. Yes, with that sense, that growing sense, that ever-growing sense that, they are a real possibility in my life. Very beautiful. Another term that's used for them very often is the four immeasurables. I quite like that term. And they're called the immeasurables because the number of beings to whom they apply is immeasurable. The motivation to benefit them is immeasurable. The virtues of doing so are immeasurable, and the excellence of the results is immeasurable. That's pretty fantastic, I think. So looked at one way, you can see them as a set of practices that really do help develop our emotional and intellectual responses in a way that allows us to meet any situation that we find ourselves in the most appropriate and positive way. And then at their peak, they represent the most immaculate, the most pure way of conduct towards living beings, this side of enlightenment. So there's very, very vast range. I relate to them very strongly as our heart's natural state. I can remember way back in the beginning when I used to think that metta was something that, I don't know, I had to conjure, I had to find, I had to produce in some sort of way. I just don't think about it like that anymore. I just think that actually it's our heart's natural state. The Dalai Lama calls them our spiritual birthright. And I love the image of the sun as a symbol of how our heart is in its pure, natural, unclouded state. The sun's always there, regardless of whether you can see it or feel it. You'll know if you've been on an aeroplane recently, that amazing sensation, you might be going up, especially if you're leaving England, it might well be dense cloud, and you go through this phase when you're in the plane where you can't see anything out of the windows but the cloud. But it reaches a certain point and then all of a sudden, wow, there it is, blue sky, sunshine, the sun is there, it's always shining. And I feel that's very much what it's like for us. Metta is like the sun, but our hearts are like the sun, but they get clouded over by the poisons, get clouded over by the kleshas. That's what obscures us. So, you know, the task is really to clear away the clouds. And we all have the experience from time to time when the clouds do suddenly clear. You know, those wonderful moments, you know, when something just sort of seems to sort of really break through, just a very natural response to something, and we're just there and it happens, and it's wonderful. And of course, sometimes the cloud will be quite impenetrable and, you know, we can't connect. And other times the cloud won't be. It'll just be quite thin cloud, all sorts in between. I find it quite helpful looking at it this way because it makes me feel, well, I feel it's much easier in a sense to sort of see what's getting in the way, to see what my clouds are, because I know then what I'm dealing with and how, perhaps, I can move towards, getting them out of the way, letting the sun shine through more naturally. I remember once on a seminar with Bhante where he likened us at the end of the retreat, when we were having our last session before we were going to be all going off out into the world, as being like little suns going out into the world. And it was a wonderful image at the time. And it does strike me very often, you know, just how wonderful it would be if my heart could really be like the sun. I mean, the sun's such a wonderful, healing, nourishing thing, isn't it? When you feel that warmth on you, and metta's like that. I mean, you'll know from your own experience when you've been in contact with metta that it's very like that. Well, just imagine that really pure, natural, unclouded heart being able to radiate out into the world. Just freeing our hearts to respond quite naturally with love and compassion, mudita and equanimity.